Welcome to Happily Family. I'm Cecilia
And
Hilke,
I'm Jason Hilke.
and we are delighted today to have Dr. Pauline Bork with us. Dr. Bork is an author, consultant, and researcher specializing in selective mutism and social anxiety based in Canada. She founded Canada's nonprofit Selective Mutism Foundation in 2017 and developed the world's first digital games and virtual reality system to address selective mutism and social anxiety. Dr. Bork has spoken and lectured at Oxford University, Belgium, Norway, and in the United States. Welcome, Pauline. It's great to have
Great
you.
to have you here on this topic.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
It's my pleasure.
I wanted to first ask you to talk about what selective mutism is. I know what that is because of my background as an occupational therapist, and I've had clients with that. But can you describe that for people who may not have heard of that before?
Sure. So selective mutism is an anxiety disorder that prevents a child mostly from speaking in social settings, despite that the child's able to speak fluently at a comfortable space, such as at home. And so the choice, the speaking, sorry, okay. The mutism behavior is not by choice. They literally cannot speak due to the anxiety experienced. So that means if a child has like urgent need, they won't even able to be able to communicate. I mentioned in other conferences and my other book that my eldest daughter, she almost drowned, and because she couldn't yell for help. And my son also has ADHD, so with selective mutism, so he has so many accidents, including broken bones, like limbs, collarbone, anyway, and he couldn't ask for help. So it's very devastating, and that's why I started looking into how to treat this, because we weren't able to get the support. Went through many experts. They weren't very helpful. They did not understand. So yeah, so here I am. I became a researcher and advocate and help the selective mutism community, not just in Canada, but anywhere in the world. Yeah, well, thanks for asking. I think more people need to know this, right?
Yeah. So if somebody is listening and they are thinking, oh, my child does have some social anxiety and maybe kind of freezes up or gets shy, how can you tell the difference between that normal kind of getting shy versus selective mutism? How does it look differently?
That's a great question, because most often everyone think the child with mutism is simply shy, right? The difference is the mutism behavior is consistent throughout, and even under urgent situations, a child who's shy will be able to speak up, but the one that's with selective mutism won't be able to, because their throat simply like ceased. It's almost like something got stuck there and no sound will come out. Yeah, that's most often described by individual with selective mutism, and I personally experienced that too.
So then with someone, or if I'm a parent supporting a child with selective mutism, what are my choices? Like, how do I go about doing that? You've worked with professionals. There's professionals out there that do work with people with selective mutism, and there's varying approaches. What is it that you have found that has worked for you and that you did with your kids?
Well, that's the thing, right? Because people do not quite understand what selective mutism is. So many, even healthcare professionals, they won't understand it, or they're not equipped with how to help these kids or this population. They're adults with selective mutism too. So that was my mission. Like after helping my children overcame selective mutism, which took a lot of trial and errors. I should mention that if you caught them early on, early intervention, is very simple and quick because it's like any phobia, right? It's an anxiety disorder. If you give them tools by not forcing them to talk, but instead focus on having fun and slowly build a speech, then they will be able to overcome. So this is why I found that there must be a way to get the child to be on board, because asking them to talk is impossible. Because they wanted to talk, they simply can't. And that's why I came up with the using video game. You know, all the kids, adult, everyone, you know, they find video game more entertaining, motivating, and addictive even. So we started developing video games with voice speech recognition. So the game only works if you use your voice. Even from start, making sound like blowing up a inflating a balloon on the screen, you just do that is some kind of sound, right? Eventually they will say like words that sounds like word but not real word, like like shooting a fly away from your pizza on the screen, or like yum, sorting food on the conveyor belt, or yuck. So stuff like that. And then single words. And then multiple words like in sentences. So it's through gameplay that kids really want to, you know, progress and beat the game. And they're focusing on beating the game with a time constraint that they don't think about people watching them. Like even they don't want to watch play in front of people, they could become the master of the game first, and then they can show their best friends who they cannot talk to how to play this game. That's how it started working. And multiplayer game works even better, right? They could be on different locations, but then that would be the first time the child speaks to their friend, right? Even though it's real time and not in the same space. But of course, there's so much limit, like there's all the limitations that we found. The one thing that worked the best right now for younger kids is video self-modeling, plus stimulus fading, plus reinforcement that I call a VSR in my previous study, research study. We were able to demonstrate that long-standing children with selective mutism who receive multiple treatments and nothing happened, they overcame selective mutism within 130 minutes
Wow.
of their time. So within 8 sessions of their time. Of course, it takes a lot of work, right? In the background for me, for the parents, for the teacher to set things up, but the actual enrollment time was 130 minutes.
That was
Like,
for the video
for self-recording,
self-modeling.
self-modeling.
Video self-modeling. And that's why I had to contribute a chapter in a perfectly happy. Oh, sorry, can we
Perfectly
say
perfectly imperfect family.
I love the title. See,
Could
I'm stuttering a little. So
you talk us through a little bit about what VSM is, and if and how parents might be able to use some of the ideas or the concepts of that?
okay, so VSM stands for video self-modeling. That is the concept of recording a child performing the target behavior that you want your child to learn or to master. Watch the video over and over again until the child believe that they can do it and believe that that is possible. So of course the video is edited or augmented, right? To make it look like the child is actually performing that target behavior. Because most often we wouldn't want to intervene unless the child needs some help, right? Things like even like emotional regulation, verbal and social skills, overcoming nightmare, like sorry, overcoming phobia, like such as nightmare, like fear of nightmare, they don't want to go to bed, right? Or other phobia, like Or even bad habit. They don't want to eat healthy food, or they don't want to eat in the public. Stuff like that. Or sensory overload and the acting fun.
So just to choose an example, say they don't want to eat in public, and that's the phobia that they have. How would you do the video self-modeling in that situation?
That's a good question. So thank you for asking. You all heard of green screen, right? Well, that's how we use it. You video record your child eating at home comfortably with a green blanket behind your back. And then you video record, let's say at the school's cafeteria or outside at the picnic at the park or at the restaurant, stuff like that. And then you replace the green screen behind with the environment that you want your child to see, to be in, to learn it. So there's free app actually for it too.
I see.
That's
So
a really good question.
this is something that parents would do themselves, where they would record at home using something like a green screen, and then they would do the video editing and put in place a different background of like the school cafeteria or wherever they're having difficulty, that the child's having difficulty or has a phobia about eating it. Is that right?
That's correct. Absolutely.
And they would watch this over and over again until they were able to do that in real life. How it talk me through about how it works.
Well, the thing is, like, it might be hard for some kids to do it right away because if it's a phobia, you don't want to scare them, right? You can it maybe have to blur the background a little bit first. So we don't want them to be running when they haven't walked yet, right? So just guide them gently. And as I like, there's a more detailed way of doing it that I described in my other book. But essentially, you want to create an achievable ladder for your child to climb through. Small step, one step at a time. At your child's level, but just a little bit harder. If it's too easy, they never progress. If it's too hard, they're not able to do it, and then they become frustrated. So the video self-modeling is evolving too, along with your child. As your child progresses, you want to make it a little harder, maybe clear the background a little bit more. And that's the same thing I do for virtual reality too, for individuals who are older, like older youth or adults, who have similar phobia or social phobia or selective mutism too. It's the same way. You gradually give them tools to ease them in. So I know I speak because I know exactly what I'm doing, and I'm so familiar with this topic. So I please stop me anytime and clarify,
Oh no,
because
this is making sense.
it's very straightforward for me, might not make sense to anyone at all.
Sure. No, I think I understand what you're saying. And with selective mutism, how do you go about recording a child saying something where that's kind of the challenge? Or is it because are you able to record it at a time when they're not anxious or they're not having difficulty talking and then putting it into a different environment?
That is even better question because, as I mentioned, speaking is not a choice for kids with selective mutism. So let's say if you want your child to learn to speak to the teacher, which is most important, right? If they want to go to the bathroom, if they want to call home or anything, they should be able to communicate with the teacher, or they're being picked on, for example. So what we do is, we film the child and a caretaker, let's say mom or dad, inside the classroom, okay, the actual classroom, without anyone in there, because the child will not speak if anyone's inside. You might have to close the door. The child want to make sure nobody could hear them and could see them talking, and that's when they might feel comfortable. It might take some time, play some game first, move around. And then once the child talks to the parent, you have the child and the parent sitting across one another. And let's say I'm the smartphone recording, okay? So the child sits here, parents sit here, and then the parent asks, let's say 10 questions. Hey, what do you feel like doing this weekend? I don't know. What do you think? We go to the park. So what you want to do at the park though? Stuff like that, just a very natural conversation, right? And then when they're done, without moving the phone or the camera, both parent and the child leaves. And then the teacher comes in. The teacher will sit on where the mom or dad was sitting. And then the teacher will pretend the child is sitting across and ask the same question that the parent was asking, and then pause in between. After that, you merge those two videos, split across, you replace the teacher with where the mom was sitting at to make it look like the child is speaking with the teacher. And that would be the first time the child actually hearing and seeing themselves speaking to the teacher. Again, it could be very anxiety provoking, but many 6-year-old boy, I've heard testimonial from parents, I couldn't believe that it worked right away. Just one time. I think there's some testimonial in our nonprofit too. There's a parent from Ireland, another from the US. They said one video self-modeling session healed their phobia of speech.
Well,
Those individual, when
wow.
after years of trying, like professionals. So yeah, it is powerful. And so the video self-modeling can help with phobia like this. It can help any condition. And research studies has demonstrated that since like even the 60s, 70s. So it's not a new technique, actually.
Yeah, it's pretty
Interesting.
interesting. And thank goodness for smartphones. It's gotten a lot more accessible on video editing and things. So I'm curious with, because I can imagine people are listening and they might be feeling a little skeptical, like, really, this has been a problem for my child for so long and so quickly they could make a change. Why do you think this works so well? And maybe this is something hard to actually research, like causation, but what theories do you have about why this is such a powerful technique?
Well, it's because when a child or individual, okay, so DSM is conducted in all kind of study for all kind of conditions with all ages. But I'm just gonna stop and stick with kids because that's my research focus for anxious kids. It's almost like rewiring your brain, believing that I can do this. Like watching yourself talk when you're not talking ever. It's becoming more believable. As I said, many of them want to talk. Most of them want to talk. They just couldn't. And even if they wanted to, they didn't know how, right? Would people think that, would people look at me? How would they react? Will I sound funny? Would I actually able to say anything, you know? And plus they have never spoken before. So video self-modeling also help break their silent identity. They are the one being known as, oh, he doesn't talk, she doesn't talk. So then they don't talk, right? And they always have spokesperson at school. Like kids are very compassionate and kind. Somehow they just I'll say most kids, somehow they just they play and they understand each other. And then when somebody let's say a substitute teacher comes in, the spokesperson will say automatically, oh, she doesn't talk, but I can talk for her, something like that. So the child, even though the child wanted to talk because this is a new person, so her selective mutism identity is not attached with this person. But now the friend told the new person that they don't talk, just trying to be, you know, being helpful and protective, right? So video self-modeling help break the silent identity. When it's shown to other people, help other people prepare. Wow, this child actually talk, and it's not a big deal if the child really talked for the first time, right? And again, sometimes seeing is not enough. It's almost like if you watch yourself playing piano on a video, but you actually don't know how to play. It will be impossible, right? But it
Yeah.
will increase your confidence, become a better piano player, right? Same thing for sports. Athletes being done for athletes to help them with their performance through video self-modeling. So I think it's just a repetition of seeing what is possible, and you rewire the brain that, wow, I can do this. That's why it's so effective.
Yeah, I
So
mean, it seems to make sense. I've heard it said that our brain doesn't know the difference between our imagination versus reality. So if we're seeing something, which is why for small children, why movies are so scary, because it looks like real life. And how do I know that that monster that I'm seeing on the screen is actually not something in real life? So it's using just a really powerful tool to confront their vision of themselves, to confront maybe their story about what they're capable of doing, what they're not capable of doing, and like continually reinforcing that. So it makes sense. It's just really, really fascinating.
And we know the power of modeling for as parents, and what in parenting in general, we're often looking at how can we model for our kids the behaviors that we want to see them doing. So this is
And
like,
then this is like them modeling it for themselves,
yeah, right.
which is,
Even more powerful.
in the
Exactly.
environment that they want to start doing it, and with the person maybe that they want to start talking to, and they're already motivated anyway because it's not about a child's lack of desire. It's about a lack of ability or,
Confidence.
the confidence, the fear of it. So I was curious if in your research, or in anecdotally, if the video self-modeling was effective for other behaviors besides selective mutism, and we've already kind of talked about other phobias that it might be useful for beyond that. Are there other applications?
Yes, definitely. So research study tend to use video self-modeling to treat disorders or a condition. So because they have control group, right? So so just to show you that even like if they can cure all kind of condition, they can definitely use it in daily life. Let's say getting a child to behave during bedtime. Let's say they follow through the bedtime routine. Okay, what do you have to do when they go to bed? Brush your teeth, change your pajamas, go to bed, maybe read a book, and stay in bed and turn off the light and go to sleep. So all those could be filmed and then make it edited and edited to look like a child actually follows through the whole sequence. Of course, you'll be prompting the whole time, or you might as well try a few nights. Recording your child, one behavior is doing good, like brushing your teeth without you sitting beside or stuff like that. But then, maybe a week later, you're able to compile the video together to make it look like the child is following through. So then your child keep like watch it, and then you keep praising them. Wow, look at what you did! And then the child might wonder, oh, I did that? Maybe I did, And they see it more and more. It could make it like a special time before bedtime, watching themselves, some snuggle time before that. So that's even more reinforcement, right? Always do something positive to reinforce the behavior. You can make it like a movie time with popcorn, or a party head. Just like, let's do a movie night, watch a magic movie, stuff like that. Just to make it special for the child to watch it, whatever they want to learn. So yeah, like it, I've heard that it also helps kids with outbursts and throwing tantrums. It's like, what? Next time, let's hold your hand together and count to 10. And then the parent will record when the child is throwing tantrum, and then the mom said, Come on, let's count. Remember what we do? Suppose the child doesn't do it, right? At the beginning. But then when you do practice, when the child is calm and doing that, you really record it on from the same angle, same room. And then you merge them together to show that your child's actually doing that. So then your child watch it over and over again. Wow, I am, yeah, okay, I'm doing it. I can do that. So next time when same thing happened, the mom or dad can simply say, hey, remember what they're gonna do now? Let's count to 10. And then that's what they do. Yeah, it could help with any behavior, especially short-term behavior, right? If your child is, let's say, too shy or lack of social skill, let's say, instead of grabbing a toy from someone, you show that your child is asking for a toy, right? Or even if your child is too scared to play with a group of kids and just standing there by themselves, you can show a video of your child walking towards the kid. Of course, you might have to help him or just merge the video looking like he is going to the kid. And then they start playing. Yeah, anything is possible. Yeah,
Yeah,
just
it's
take imagination and creativity and the tool, that one tool.
And
Yeah.
it reminds me of a similar technique that I used when I was an occupational therapist of writing a story about a child doing a certain thing, but I only had stick figures, or maybe if I got, really went above and beyond, I would put photographs in of the child doing that thing. This is another, there's some similarities, and I can see how useful it would be. So I love
And
that.
it's nice the
That's great.
technology is making it so much
Yeah.
more possible, so much easier now, given that we have video cameras on our phones all the time. We have, like, the ability to edit and to shoot video is so much easier now, and being able to use that technology in a variety of ways to support kids is a great way to be supporting them and modeling it for them. And Pulling, as we're wrapping up, do you have any final words or anything you want to leave the audience with about this?
I'd encourage if they have any questions, feel free to check out my website, pollingboard.com, which I'm sure you share with everyone. And feel free to reach out. And I actually have a book coming up based on this chapter with more detail. I forgot to mention that you can use AI now to help you create those videos. So with the technology, anything is possible. In the past, you have to, rent a webcam when my kids were babies, and you have to hire people professional to edit videos, but now you don't need to. There's
Yeah.
also free app like CapCut that you can use as well. So yeah, just feel free to drop by a note, and I have a new the book new book coming up that I could share with you on my website too.
Awesome. Great. We'll include a link to your website in the speaker notes so people who want to learn more about this or learn how to do it themselves can get that information from you and find out more about your upcoming book. Pauline, thanks for taking the time to talk to us. Thanks for all your work on this and supporting kids with selective mutism and other behaviors, being able to use VSM. So thank you so much. It's good talking to you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye.